Okay, so we are live here with the Shakti Rise Immersion, the interview series for the spring. And I have my dear friend, Peggy Markell, on the line. Are you there, Peggy?
Hi, Jeannie. I'm here. Hi.
Yay! I'm so excited to have you as an interviewee. And let's dive in with your bio. I mean, I've known Peggy for, we were figuring this out, for 25 to 30 years. We're not sure. Between that 25-30 year mark, a long, long time. And it's been such a beautiful friendship to have and to
see. I've been keeping my eye on you, Jeannie.
And I keep my eye on you all over the world. I had the opportunity of visiting Peggy at her flat in Florence last fall, and that's just one of the many places that she travels. One of her homes in the world is in Florence, Italy, where she does beautiful courses in cooking and food and just the topic that we're going to dive into today. But let me tell people a little bit more about you from your bio, because it's quite a beautiful bio. So Peggy's interest in the delicate relationship of food and its origins began early. For me, a connection to real food is a connection to life. Peggy relates, she found kinship with the slow food movement in 1993, recognizing in its values that echoed her own. Slow food aims to reorient our relationship to food and its production. Our actions must be in harmony with our surroundings. Peggy sees that in this return to balance, there's nothing. Oh, did I skip that? No, Peggy sees that in this return to balance, there's nothing lost in resources and a lot to gain in contentment and satisfaction. It's a process about which she's passionate. It's the tangible fertility of the earth, ripe and ready for seed, that's so moving for me. It speaks to a larger harmony and reminds us of the beauty and grace that is the fortune of the present moment. For the past 17 years, Peggy has traversed the Mediterranean and North Africa, from Elben fishing villages and Moroccan markets to the homes of Tuscan artisans and chefs, furthering her own exploration of culture and cuisine. On these journeys, she saw an opportunity to design and direct her own brand of culinary tours in which enjoyment of the present place and moment plays a pivotal role. When we speak of slow travel, we mean that particular experience of letting yourself merge with your surroundings, the pace, customs, mores, and styles of where you find yourself. It's really about our willingness to let the world in and see ourselves a part of it. This is so beautiful, Peggy, because I think that's, we were just speaking prior to this interview about the challenges in the world around you know, in yoga, we would say that the lack of fullness we might feel could come out as not really nourishing ourselves in a way that has, I want to say, magic and beauty and even sensuality when we approach, I want to use the word nourishment. And when I'm around you, I was saying this, when I'm around you, I always feel that. I always feel that, you know, you would put a tablecloth on the table and you would light a candle and you would have a bouquet of flowers and a good bottle of olive oil and how rich that is for me. And I think maybe because I get into that, I was saying earlier, a little bit of a masculine role in my life where I'm the doer. I think I'm the doer and I just fill the day with doing. And then it comes to dinner, and it's sort of like beans and rice, you know, which can be good, but
yeah.
Let's sort of dive in. You know, what is it about, you know, you use that word slow, the slow food movement and the slow travel, a means in which we, you know, we really immerse ourselves in wherever we find ourselves. How can we find this again? It seems to be so natural to you.
Well, you know, I just have to make one little correction. It's been almost 25 years since I've been doing this program. I think I better update that bio.
Yeah, update that. I was thinking that, too. I was like, whoa,
yeah, it's been a
17
long
years,
time
and there are more places that you've been, for sure.
Yeah, but it's also just for that long, and I know that you and I were both connecting around food even 25 years ago, and this was during a time, you know, when we were even, you know, like before having babies, you know, and then after having babies, or the idea of also being pregnant and what did that mean. And I think that before I started having babies, I also had a connection to natural foods and a connection to macrobiotics and a sort of already sort of a connection to alternative or the natural world or the natural way of doing things. And so when you're a young woman and also thinking about having your baby, you have to nourish yourself in a certain way, then there are, you know, you pay attention also in a different way because you're not only nourishing yourself, you have to nourish, you know, this growing baby inside of you. So from my background at that time, it was really based on, you know, a very balanced way of looking at eating, and also based in grains and beans and, you know, soups and sea vegetables. It was basically a traditional Japanese way. And it was a very clean way. But it meant you had to sort of cook, you know. And I did all that, and I was very connected to it. And I think it also carried me very healthily through, you know, two pregnancies and two healthy babies. And then we started traveling around a good bit because my husband was an importer at the time. And so then we found ourselves in different cultures. And when you get out of America and sort of the way things are done here, especially if we're talking, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, you know, we weren't still so connected to food. It was like the natural food movement, you could say, was still very, very new. And being here in Boulder, which was sort of the seat of it in a big way, you know, we were lucky to know as much as we did. So carrying that background, which I had very strongly, you know, inside of me into these other cultures, and I'm talking Southeast Asia, we lived also in even New Zealand, Australia, you know, I looked at that idea of if you eat what grows around you, you become more adaptable to your area. And so that has now become the whole idea of local food, you know, eating local food, supporting local farmers, and trying to at least eat, you know, what we can get organically that's also grown close by. And so that's one aspect, you know, of, you know, somehow being in the other cultures, I saw how they certainly ate what grew around them because they didn't have trucking. They didn't have other ways of transportation, which was actually good for them. And, you know, even village people, you know, had beautiful teeth and they were strong and, you know, the food was delicious. And traditional food is really based in culture, you know. I mean, it's very much a part of who the culture is and the culture is very much a part of what they eat. And so that was a big connection for me. And so then as we traveled around and as I sort of pooled that knowledge I had about, you could even say, macrobiotics or then now this cultural experience and being connected to food in that way, it wasn't long after that that I sort of went in search of trying to make connections back to other cultures that seemed to make more sense for us from a Western point of view. And so Italy was the first place I landed where light bulbs went off and I thought, oh my goodness, this is really, you know, the epitome, I think, of what a Western healthy diet could be. Because I wasn't one of those who actually started or had a French background, so I wasn't into the whole, you know, gourmet souffle, you know, it wasn't my background at all. But coming from macrobiotics into an Italian cuisine was easy because it was based in olive oil. It was based in, you know, a very wide array of vegetables, also grains, beans, you know, little, actually Tuscany eats a lot of meat, but, you know, you can engage that yourself. But the sensuality also of how they approached food, because it's how they live, also with these high Renaissance ideals and the beauty of the countryside and what does grow around them, if you think about it, olive oil, beautiful vines for wine, you know, delicious foods to work with, it was kind of an easy choice. It was kind of a long-winded answer to sort of tell you how I kind of got around to that. But then that was the jumping-off place, so we can go wherever you like from here.
Well, I love this because as we were speaking about the women in this course have been studying this goddess Lalita, and there are aspects of Lalita that I was saying really remind me of you, and even of Florence itself, the city itself, where I got to spend my junior year abroad when I was in college, and then just, you know, had that beautiful trip with you, what, 24
right.
years ago.
24 years ago.
And then, you know, went on my honeymoon. We went all over Italy, and then I got to go back last year, and just being in Italy again and feeling the connection of everywhere in Italy, the connection to food and to the sensuality of food is one of Lalita's one of her attributes is that she has so much fullness, and they say it's really this inner spiritual fullness that we might call kundalini or awakened energy, that really meets her in the world. So as I was saying earlier, she is likened to the Tuscan hillside, the countryside, and she, and I would go as far as to say, as, you know, Florence itself, with its jewels and its sophistication and its sense of design and artisanship, these are all aspects of Lalita. And when I think of you, Peggy, I think of Lalita because she's also queenly. And I think, you know, even when I saw you in Italy, I was like, everyone knows Peggy. And you go to the farmer's market here, and it's like, everyone knows Peggy. You know, it's like you go to any restaurant in Boulder, and everyone knows Peggy. And it's a delight to be with you in these settings because it's, well, one, you get lots of great food. And it's always great conversation. And so she's about joyful pleasure, about good food, wine, and company. And you reflect that, and I think...
Well, that's very kind of you, my goodness.
Yeah, well, I think it's true, and I think it just sort of oozes from you. And I think that isn't true for everyone, and I think that we struggle with a feeling of not knowing how to create beauty or how to... The other thing that I was thinking about today was this understanding in yogic terms of one of the ways that we crimp our light is that we think that we are so bound by time. And I fall into this, and I think I'm the doer of everything, and I forget to fall back into this, you know, whatever I'm cooking at home, my sister comes around, she's like, she's cooking again. Like, it's so nourishing for me to spend time chopping onions and throwing them into a pot of oil, and, you know, just the sensuality of even cooking seems to be lost to some extent in this country. And perhaps it's coming back with all these amazing farm-to-table opportunities we have, and certainly the farmers markets that are blossoming all over the country, certainly in Boulder. But, you know, I don't, you know, I guess the question is, like, how do we come back to understanding how to create this for ourselves?
I don't know if you can hear all this popping. I'm making a fire, which I think is quite appropriate.
Yes, it is.
It happened to be that time of day, and I was a little chilly, and as I'm making the fire, I started thinking, oh, my goodness, well, that is such an element that we have to respect, thinking about cooking and also the fires we build within and what yoga does for us as well, even with the kundalini breathing. And, you know, so there is a connection to respecting the fires within, in the sense of hunger, you know, and that it's really important to feed ourselves, just like I'm feeding this fire. You know, unfortunately, we've lost, what we've lost is here is the connection to rhythm, And America doesn't live on a rhythm. America exists off doing. And, you know, nobody stops. I mean, I'm just going to say generally speaking, you know, stopping to have your, you know, lunch or stopping to have your dinner or even stopping to have an aperitivo in the evening. You know, that's just not something we think about, you know, like that the social aspect or, you know, that it's good to have rhythm within the day. You know, you get up, you do whatever you're going to do, you go to work, and then you stop for a little while. Then you get, you know, in Italy, they in many places around the world, Spain and so forth, they rest. Then they get up and they work again. And some people even think they even do their lives one-third sleeping, one-third, you know, like enjoying their life, and one-third working, you know. And I would say mostly, you know, here in America, we just think we have to do, and then we grab something on the side, and most people are extremely confused about what they should eat, what they shouldn't eat, what they're allergic to, what's good, what's organic, what's not organic. There's so much, you know, there's too many concepts even to think about, you know. And I think the beauty of having spent the last 25 years roaming around the different parts of the world and actually focused on food and creating these programs in different parts, you know, that have strong, you know, food backgrounds is that all in every one of these cultures, they stop. Even if it's not like midday, you know, like you, even in Morocco, you know, they eat at all times of the day and evening, but they stop. It doesn't matter. They're going to stop and they're going to sit down and, you know, they're going to share a meal together. Mm-hmm. And so the Italians have always stopped, for instance, you know. And so I think that's part of it is that, A, we don't stop. B, when we do, you know, we don't usually take the time to say, I'm going to make a nice lunch and we're going to sit down and we're going to have lunch. And it, you know, and it shouldn't take more than, say, an hour or 2 hours to do that. But who's even got an hour to 2 hours? Nobody thinks about it. But I have to say that when I'm home, you know, I really enjoy doing that. You know, I definitely enjoy doing that. Even in, you know, in these days, you know, I was trying to, here's a story that you'll love and probably your listeners will as well. Who wants to pay $18 for an organic chicken? Probably no one's like, oh, my God, $18 for an organic chicken. You know, like, that's ridiculous, you know? Well, I want you to know that I just made 5 meals out of an organic chicken that cost $18.
Wow.
It was a delicious chicken. And so first I roasted the chicken, and I loved it because I made this 40 cloves of garlic, and I used preserved lemon on it. Was on that snowy day, and so we had, first we had this, you know, beautiful roast chicken, and then with greens on the side, I didn't even make rice or, you know, anything, which I usually will, and then the next day I think we did make rice, and we had the chicken, you know, then off the bone, half of it went into a soup, the next chicken, it went into salad, then we had a little more chicken, and it ended up like in even a stir fry, I believe. And then I had you made a broth out of the carcass. Now that carcass has lasted for, you know, the broth from that carcass has fed soups and two different soups, and it just kind of keeps giving. And that's very nutritious food. I mean, you know, if you're vegetarian, it's not that nutritious, but there are other ways to look at the generosity of food. And so if you have some cooking background at all, like I'm teaching my partner how to cook. He doesn't think he knows anything about food. And if I'm not home and I'm on my way home, what do I do with this cauliflower, for instance? Now, I taught him how to make such a beautiful, simple soup out of, you know, cauliflower, onions, and a little, you know, water and just spices. And, you know, then blend it afterwards. It's this gorgeous soup. So there are easy things to do that I think most people don't think about. But knowing how to work with food, taking the time to sit down, have a conversation, not be on your phone, not be on your computer, and then move along is like a thing of the past. It's almost an ancient thing, but it's so worthwhile.
I love that about the Italian culture because it's not that they're not on the go, but the presence of company and family and camaraderie is so apparent. You know, I just saw a film on teenagers and screens, and it's called Screenager or something like that. And it's really quite frightening because, you know, I mean, there are lots of reasons why it's problematic as well as helpful. But the problematic piece that relates to our theme today is that, you know, kids are bringing their screens to the table. It's not this time of sharing anymore. And, you know, I think people are eating in 20 minutes now. And it's one of the greatest memories I have of growing up with my family is, I told my mother this at Easter, is being at her table and having, she just always, you know, decks out the table, and it's always this family affair of cooking. So, you know, and yet I see my own struggles as a parent and as a working mother, and both my husband and I work, you know, believe it or not, as a yoga teacher, I work pretty full time. And the challenges of creating this beautiful time for families is just, it's another thing that we're challenged by today is sitting down and inviting our friends over and taking time to enjoy a meal together and enjoy the time of conversation. It seems so basic.
Yeah. Do you know that, I was just going to say, my partner is a cultural consultant, and he says that the strongest value in so many other cultures is family. If you ask an American what the strongest value was, they would not say family. They would probably say freedom. And individualism is another way of putting that, you know, and also getting ahead. You know, like those are the values that we have. And so you don't put the focus on the main value as family. So that's
it's so interesting you say that. I just had this sort of upsurging of kind of an insight around this conversation as when we think about the table and being in the, you know, maybe not always a circular table, but perhaps a circular table, the idea of conversation and sharing of food, it's quite feminine. And this idea that we don't value, we don't honor that time of preparation of a meal, of nourishment, it really goes against the feminine principle of what we call in yoga, Shri. And anytime the goddess isn't honored and respected, she's said to disembody. And you know, in yogic terms, we would say that we have been living in a contracted time for thousands of years, and that the feminine is really trying so desperately to embody again, literally through each of us, men and women. And I really believe that bringing back the meals and the conversation are part of that. I really
agree.
Yes.
Because, you know, we also have more time to sort of talk about what's really going on. And then, you know, there's a wonderful man named Theodore Zeldin. He's Palestinian, but he's written many books on the art of conversation. And, you know, to actually take, have courage to go places and that you don't usually go, you know, and to bring the conversation alive and talk about what's really happening and not be so surface. And so these are the things that you're talking about that I base all of my programs on, so that we're interested in where food comes from. We're interested in, you know, how it particularly connects to that culture. We're interested how their expression brings it to the table. And then the idea of sitting around the table and whether we're in a wine drinking culture or not, or, you know, the sort of the honor or the toast that go along with sitting at the table, and then the food, and then the conversation. And then even the satiation of sitting around after, you know, the meal has been finished, you know, like there's a real celebration to that. And I do think that we allow ourselves that, you know, at Christmas time maybe, or somewhere around the holidays. But we, you know, it's not sort of the same appreciation that we could bring to our tables on a daily basis, you know, to sort of mimic or shine some light on what you were saying before about, you know, we have the opportunity every time we have a meal or sit down. We not only have to throw a tablecloth over a table in your kitchen, you can make a sweet little table under a tree. You could go in a field. It doesn't really matter. What does matter is everything matters. Everything matters. So what attention you bring to, say, for instance, to your to whatever gesture of feeding yourself or feeding others, and how you present the table as an expression or an aesthetic, that is food in itself. And so these very gestures feed people, and it also feeds yourself because it feels good to do. Especially, I think, if you're connecting from this goddess, from what you're saying, and the people and who are in your Shakti Rise, you know, like that's an expression of beauty, and that has its own satisfaction.
Mm. Yeah, rather than sort of the you know, thinking of like the mother that's doesn't feel appreciated, and she's having to cook again, or you know, that kind of picture of mother who is like overworked in the home. Instead, it's this it's really this love that's being offered. It's this beauty. It's really the goddess Lakshmi and Lalita that we're talking about. Really the ability to nourish from inside, because we feel full enough inside that we just want to nourish others. It's just a beautiful, makes me want to go cook right now. Oh, I love this conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking of the poor, 50s housewife, who, and my mother, watching her think that it had, she had to cook again, and she had finished the laundry and the ironing. I mean, there wasn't the same sort of appreciation of who they were and what their contribution was, and it was expected, and so they wanted some freedom from all that. And that's where the Industrial Revolution came along and offered up canned vegetables, because and tried to, create this, industry that took us away from, real food and real cooking, and they try to convince the housewives that it was going to be better for them and it would free them from the kitchen. But if you think of our grandmothers loved doing that, it was more, things were more in balance, I think, during our my grandparents were like that, but I come from the South, maybe that's also one reason why I have this seed planted in me, We definitely ate heirloom seed, fruits, vegetables, food was on the table. It was all very, very thought out, and what the grandfather had brought to the table was being then, cooked by, my grandmother and my aunt. And, so those were beautiful experiences to have as a child. And so you talk to me about slow food. Well, that's also slow food. Slow food, their original byline was in protection of our rights to pleasure. That's what their whole thing was about. And so that it took time to be able to produce the things that can also create pleasure or produce pleasure. And so, if you've taken whatever tension you've put into what you're doing translates, where people can actually feel it or taste it, or they get something from it. If people aren't using good ingredients, they're not really present in themselves when they're cooking, they sort of don't really care about what they're doing, and they present something on the table, then that's going to translate also, So
yeah.
I think that's where we're coming back to, the attention is everything, or the, even what would you call that, Jeannie? From what your yogic sort of offering. I don't know.
Yeah, you mean attention in itself?
Well, I'm just saying, basically it becomes an offering. Whatever
yes.
attention you put into something,
yes.
then
yes.
When you present that on the table, it becomes an offering. You even say, make this practice stay an offering to someone you love.
Yes.
Whatever you're putting into that can be an offering to someone you love.
Yes, it's so beautiful. I totally relate to that. And I think that I have hope for it, because I feel like when I, when I'm down at the farmer's market, I feel like there's so many people embracing gardens again, that there is a revolution in a sense, to support local farmers and local meats and local cheeses here in Boulder. You know, I still want to get my olive oil from Italy. But, but that it seems like we have had a revolution of a kind in the last several years. Certainly living in Boulder, we feel these things. You know, getting our getting a farm share or even gardening ourselves, that definitely seems to be on the rise again. It certainly was big for my parents growing up. They always had a garden, and their parents had a garden, and yet there I can see where even one of my grandparents, just like when the canned food came out, she was so ecstatic about it. Five kids later, and you know, all these meals later. But I'm hopeful for our future, and I think part of this course is about the embrace of feminine, and Lalita is one of those aspects of the feminine that we're specifically speaking to through food and through beauty and through creating beauty through food and nourishment and being in the company of great beings and you know, gathering around the table with flowers and candles and making it literally you make yoga, right? It's
right.
Like every time I come to my mat, it's like there is some effort that I have to do. I've got to like get up, be motivated, roll up my mat, stand up and start breathing and moving, and sometimes that's not easy.
No,
other times it's super fluid, and I think that
difficult.
Making a meal can also be this way. But do you see, especially in this country, are we moving forward, or is it just sort of we have sort of a great effort that isn't really doing much?
I still think we're missing the simplicity, you know, like basic simplicity. It's still like there's the farm-to-table movement, which is fantastic. I also think slow food has made its voice known. I think that there's certainly, you know, more quality food available. I don't know that people know a lot to do with it. And, you know, I don't know that they really understand, you know, sort of the basis of good food, you know. And so I think people are intimidated by that. And then if you sort of find it in the restaurants, often it's a little construed, it's still conceptual. It's still not based in just basic good food. You go to the farmer's market. I think going to the farmer's market in the summer would be a great exercise. You know, don't think about recipes. Don't think about what you want or want to cook or whatever. Just go to the farmer's market. You know, go where you feel drawn. If it's corn, you know, get the corn. If it's beautiful red beets, get the beets. You know, get a few things and take them home. And, you know, cook them simply. You know, even if you're boiling the corn and boiling, I happen to really love beets, you know, so I would actually, you know, boil them and slice them and put olive oil and a little bit of vinegar and a little bit of, you know, salt, and I'd be happy as a clam. Just whatever, you know, in simple greens or beautiful salad, that is a wonderful place to start. And just that intention alone, you've supported your farmer. Maybe it's more expensive than you would like to be paying, but you know, you know exactly where it's coming from. It's not being shipped somewhere and you're not paying for a huge grocery store's rent, you know. You're buying good food, you're taking it home. Maybe you're going to prepare something for a friend, or maybe your family, or maybe just yourself. But those simple gestures alone are so simple, and they're just wholesome. I think the word wholesome is something that I would like to bring back, you know, gather and be wholesome. And, you know, pay attention and feed yourself and just like, you know, it's wonderful.
Simplicity can also be, it can be sensual. You know, I was thinking of just like a really good bottle of olive oil with some beets, like, you know, like, or some goat cheese. You know, I mean, I often do that. You know, just the simplest thing, like you're saying, And, you know, this weekend you're going to be joining us for in a couple of days for this topic on food and sensuality. And I don't know if you want to just touch on that. You know, I mean, I feel like just that can be sensual. It's
mm-hmm.
And yet, is it
something, definitely.
This is something that I've had a curiosity around, is it something that we must feel inside of ourselves in order to experience, or can it come from the food itself that offers us that, you know, experience of, you know, biting into a juicy mango, like you were saying, or, you know, sipping that incredible chai, or, you know, what is it that allows us to tap into that part of ourselves that is just in awe and in wonder of the exoticness, you know, exotic spices, or, you know, the wonder of it all. I think travel always does that for me. That's why I always want to jump on one of your trips.
Well, I think there again, curiosity. You know, if you're curious, you're open. And you know, also there's just so much to appreciate about, you know, my friend Elizabeth, she's writing a book, and it has to do all about apple pie. You know, I mean, one of her chapters is on apple pie, you know, and like, how can we enjoy an apple pie? Well, where do the apples come from? Where does, you know, where the apples come from? The tree, you know, the tree comes from the soil, you know, finding our interconnectedness and how important that is. And so once we sort of experience our curiosity and we're open and we're questioning, you know, then when you bring, for instance, if we're going to say food in on the sensual level, it's sort of like that is real, that is real pleasure. And it's not just sort of like, you know, like blown, you know, overblown sexual pleasure. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the sensuality of basic food and feeding yourself. And I almost don't want to give away, you know, what we're going to talk about, Jeannie.
Yes.
You know,
okay.
But it goes way back. It's very primitive, you know. And so what I'll be talking about is sort of the first primitive gestures that are made, you know, where the connection to food is made, you know, even if you didn't have that as a child, you know, ways that you can incorporate that into your life now, you know, just being open and curious is the answer to that question. And then, you know, and if you want to connect more in that way, you certainly can. It's easy.
So beautiful. Well, I am so delighted to have had this time with you. Is there anything you want to add into this conversation before we close up?
Well, just how much I appreciate where you've gone on your path since, you know, we started out on our food path, and then I connected, you know, I kept going on my food path and you went on your yogic path. And
yes.
I love that we're making full circle, and I'm doing yoga and you're cooking and still doing things. So
I know, and I'm desperate to go on one of your India trips. And just Peggy just has these incredible journeys around the world. You can see, you can go to her website, peggymarkel.com. And
that's M-A-R-K-E-L.
Yeah, M-A-R-K-E-L. And just the way in which you gather people, you gather the, you know, I'm thinking about Morocco and just the herb gardens we went to, and just the connections you make across the world, it really is, you really do embody Lalita in the sense that you have this inner desire and inner passion that is met in the world, you know, to bring people this experience, these experiences that we've been talking about, the connection to food, to nourishment, to community, to each other. It's just, there's nothing better than sitting around a table eating beautiful food and having conversation. I mean, really.
Absolutely. Well, also in just seeing how different cultures do it, you know, and, you know, we do the sailing trips too, which add that element of sea, and see how the island life works. And then, you know, when you're talking about Morocco, there's a very different culture, but then their sense of hospitality. And then, you know, in India, the world is so big, you know, and their cuisine is so complex, but it's really based in something also very ancient in their use of spices and so forth, and how it's still relevant even to this day. So, you know, there are many cultures to visit, but the thread is the same, and we can create that right here in our own home too. And so I would just say that it's really important just to, you know, open the door and take it, you know, back down to a very simplistic way, and trust your intuition. Trust your intuition. People think, I don't know how to cook, I don't know how to do this, I don't know what I should be eating. You know, it doesn't really matter, you know, from a conceptual point of view. Really try to just, you know, connect to what you feel attracted to in a real food sense, and keep, you know, following your intuition. That's what I would say.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much. It's just so much fun to have this time to connect about your work, and how this relates to this goddess is a very cool connection. And, yeah, just keep doing this incredible work. It's so important to me to even connect. Whenever Peggy's in town, I'm like, oh, just want to be around her, because you bring these essential pieces back to me. It's like, I want more of this in my life.
Yeah, you always say so. We need to do that.
Yes.
We need to sit down. We either need to cook a meal together, Jeannie, or, you know, I just said have you over. And whatever way, we need to sit at the table together. But I want you to know how much I'm really looking forward to this weekend, and being with you in this long, full day journey, and looking forward to meeting your students.
Yay. Thank you so much, Peggy.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Much love.
Much love to you. See you soon.
Okay. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.